Welcome, members and guests, to the City Club of Eugene's June 3rd, 2016 program, The Black Mosaic, The Mosaic, Black Activism in Eugene. I'm Mary Layton, former City Club president. Because of scheduling issues last week, we were not able to officially recognize our newly elected board president, who will take over from here. Please welcome Juan Carlos Valle.
Thank you, Mary, for the kind introduction. So do not adjust your television. Yes, I'm a little bit brown. It's the sun, probably. Newly elected board members, Janelle, Susan, and Paul, if you're here, can you please stand up? Thank you. Please stand up. Keep it up. And Sandy Erickson, would you please stand up? Sandy Erickson, Program Committee Chair. And Sandra Bishop, President-elect. I want to thank you for your willingness to step forward and provide and invest in City Club. Your willingness to serve on the board and activities can make a big difference, and already is. So thank you for your willingness to spend time away from families and your loved ones. Thanks once again. The City Club hosts nearly 50 original nonpartisan issue programs every year, and today is our 32nd program of our 2015-16 programming year. We welcome anyone who has a stake in community life. If you believe that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please join us. You can join us at www.cityclubofeugene.org. I'd like to welcome Mary Layton, who will introduce and give the background on our panel today. Thank you.
Before I do that, I actually wanted to say a few words about Juan Carlos. He's served on our board for the last several years and has been an active member of several different committees. He's a former chair of the Police Commission, founding president of LULAC of Lane County, and the national vice president for the Hispanic Affairs Advisory Council, among many involvements throughout the community. And we're very happy to welcome him as our new president. The Mosaic will paint a picture of the African-American experience in Eugene and Lane County. Representatives of three generations of activists will discuss the role of the Black community in the history of the city and explain how the culture of the city continues to shape the Black community. The elders will offer insights from experience and engage their younger counterparts in conversation about how this history might inform current and future work. Willie Mims is an octogenarian, believe it or not. Born in Eugene, he is a trustee of the Mims Houses, the first Black-owned property within the city of Eugene. The Mims family hospitality was legendary among Black visitors to the city during times when they were not allowed to stay in public accommodations. He will describe some of the historical events he experienced as an elder in the Black community. Eric Richardson, a native of Eugene and a member of City Club, is a historian and a jazz musician. He's been the president of the local branch of the NAACP since 2013. He grew up in a family deeply engaged in social activism, promoting the development of culturally inclusive curriculum in Oregon public schools. Shanice Curry is the external director of Black Women of Achievement. She will be the first to graduate in her family of eight, having earned a BS in Ethnic Studies and Planning, Public Policy, and Management. Recently, she became a member of Delta Sigma Theta sorority, one of the sororities which has been resurrected on campus or created on campus as a result of some of the activism of students in the last couple of years. Tariq Richardson is a Gilman scholar and a former director of the University of Oregon Black Student Union. He'll graduate this month with a major in history with a double minor in African Studies and Religious Studies. Tariq has served this term as a City Club Civic Associate, and we're very proud claim some small fragment of his fame and accomplishment. Tariq is your host, and he will manage this event.
All right, thank you for having us here. I just want to tell you a little bit about the name Mosaic. So 4 years ago, I was thinking of an event kind of like this one, where we're talking about what made Eugene unique, what made our community unique. And the mosaic idea came from my dear friend, Nedzer Arielis, who is saying the Eugene community and the history of activism here in their city is a painting almost that has all these different working parts in it, like a mosaic. And a key part of this mosaic is the three generations who have played an active role. The elders who have been here and been fighting for many decades. Then you have their predecessors who are our predecessors, the younger generations, and the middle class. So growing up as a student, a child in Eugene, I used to go to the Mims personal house over in South Eugene area, and he was just a family member, a community member. And it wasn't until later in my life that I realized how important he was and his family was to the history of activism in the city of Eugene. Just recently, we had a monument erected on his family's property, which you guys can go see. It's on 3rd and High. And I would like to invite Mr. Mims up to share his experience and a little bit about what his family has done here in the city.
I already made one mistake. I didn't bring my hearing aids, so I don't get a chance to hear what I say. Of course, my name is Willie Mims, and I grew up most of my life in Eugene, Oregon. And I'm here to speak on my experience as an African-American who did grow up in Eugene, Oregon. I really can't do that without reaching some mutual mental understanding with each of you. We all at some time in our youth did something that we knew our parents would object to. For us to believe when an individual commits a racist act or action that they have no understanding about what they are doing is for us to live in a pool of ignorance. When I came here to speak about poverty in Lane County years back, I didn't come to lie. I didn't come to make something up, to look good, to impress. Then, like now, I come to tell the truth as I know it. I'm open to change when I have made a mistake. I was born in Texas. Up to the age of 6, gave me plenty of time to experience white only, no color allowed signs at stores, bus stops, restaurants, movies, public restrooms, and water fountains. During the 1960s, Black movement for equality, I noticed something different in the great racial divide. No matter how racist a person or situation was, business had no separate cash registers. White folks didn't have to wipe off the Black folks' money. I found there was some equality in the United States, which was money. At least when it flowed from the Black man's hand into the white man's hands. Like most parents of the world, as a child in Oregon, my parents sheltered me from the hardships they endured. But if you walked with me downtown Eugene back then, in the mid-40s, you would have seen two of these racist sign displayed in plain view. When there was no signs, the attitude that they represented was present and active throughout the entire community. I could have introduced you to the only 3 Black men who worked downtown Eugene. There was my Uncle Mac McCurtis, shining shoes at Old Ole's Barbershop. Mr. Leo Washington, red cap at the SP train station. And my father, C.B. Mims, a busboy at the Osborn Hotel. New homes for returning World War II vets created a booming lumber industry, and Lane County was the cream of the crop. As far as I know, the companies were pretty much locally owned, some by family names that are recognizable today. Except for the SP Railroad, these companies shared a common thread with the rest of the Eugene business community. They did not hire black people. To be fair, neither did the city or county government, the school district, University of Oregon, EWEB, LCC, on and on. If it wasn't for being labeled insane, you might think there was some kind of conspiracy going on. Through the 4J school system, most white kids were friendly, but standoffish to me, particularly the boys. No 4J instructor ever consulted me about higher education. Although the algebra teacher at Eugene High School stopped me from taking a seat to tell me point blank in front of the class that I would fail his class. In the early 60s, I found myself drawn into social activism through a childhood friend, Sam Reynolds Jr. I joined CORE, organized by a group of University of Oregon professors and students. The primary goal was supporting the University of Oregon student volunteers assisting black registration and voting in Mississippi. My participation in CORE was like someone turning on a bright light in my life. The situation people was talking about down south, poor living condition, access to housing, jobs, health care, police, community hostility, education. Heck, I've been around and lived in those conditions all my life. I could vote easy enough, but the rest sound just like Eugene, Oregon. A couple of months ago, I was asked if I would be interested in a part-time job as a community aide in a poverty, A couple months later, I was asked if I would be interested in a part-time job as a community aide in a poverty program. Being unemployed because nothing had really changed in Eugene, I jumped at the chance, even though I didn't know one iota about LBJ's war on poverty. As an African American growing up in Eugene, it was not difficult for me to identify with the struggle and aspiration of the 98.8% poor white population in Lane County. We all have heard about the failure of the war on poverty programs. It may be so, but that was not true in Eugene, Oregon. Maybe the problems others had stemmed from similar problems our program started out with. By contrast, staffing did not reflect or engage the community it was supposed to serve. The board of directors, by contrast, by contract, was to was supposed to represent one-third community at large, one-third agency or organization, and one-third minorities and the poor. This multi-million dollar program mission was contracted to organize and be an advocate for minorities and the poor. In Eugene, lower level staff, such as myself, committed a sort of mutiny, which resulted to equal representation of the community that was to be served. There are successes and defeats. Under the umbrella of Lane Human Resources was programs like Head Start, Title VI program, legal aid, and Lane County Housing Program, which had to be moved from Springfield to Eugene because of discrimination. Efforts we initiated, the Lane Community College Dental Technician Program, OUR Credit Union, setting up a tutorial program with UO University of Oregon students. The Black Boutique. Our main task was organizing community groups around their needs and finding solutions. The year Martin Luther King died, with the aid of four prominent businessmen who did not want to be publicly identified, but the types we name our parks after, stepped forward, and for the first time in Eugene private sector history, while I was here, we placed 38 African Americans who were given the opportunity to train on the job. Six of those people retired from those jobs, and they all have children who graduated from the University of Oregon and Oregon State. Sorry, kind of bring a tear to my eyes. Under the leadership of my friend, Dr. Clyde DeBerry, CORE became the local advocate for social justice for African Americans in Eugene. It acted, protected, and demanded change in discriminations of jobs, housing, police, education, whenever or wherever discrimination existed. CORE wrote and submitted the proposal for the Eugene Human Rights Commission, a first in the USA, and the key element in Eugene receiving the 1969 All-American City Award. CORE supported the black students at both the U of O and LCC and their efforts to form the Black Student Union. In 1970, I made the decision to go into business. The obstacles that existed for me getting a job transitioned themselves into obstacles in getting finances for my business. Surviving for 35 years was no small feat. As I look back over the last 50 years, my childhood remember the love and happy times with family. My young man remember the sting of rejection. The mature man realized there is still much to be done. As an elder, I understand we are not through. Thank you.
Growing up in Eugene, Coming from St. Louis, Eric Richardson spent a lot of time with people like Willie Mims and other activists. But Eric Richardson, even before becoming president of the NAACP Lane County in 2013, had already had a long history of activism. And I'm going to bring him up here today to talk to you guys about his experience raising family, sending people to University of Oregon, and even being an activist in the 80s and 90s in Eugene, Oregon.
Thank you very much. I'm really proud of my son, Tariq. Tariq, thank you for putting this together. He's followed through. So today I want to just follow up with on Willie's talk. As you heard, Willie was firsthand in Eugene, seeing the transitions from the 40s, 50s into the 60s. As a young man, I was born in St. Louis, actually, 1968. And so the year that Dr. King was assassinated. And for me and my family, that had a big effect on us. And one of the effects was that my parents were going to be a self-reliant couple, a couple that kind of looked within, because a lot of people's hearts were broken with the assassination of Dr. King. A lot of people's faith and hope that change would come through government or through the system was broken. And a lot of these people felt like, well, what can we do ourselves to make change? And so I think that was part of the reason our family ended up in Oregon in 1971, because part of the idea of moving west is a continual idea. People still come to Oregon, getting away from the city, moving west. And so the idea of moving west is an intellectual exercise as well, because what does the west mean? It means expansion, moving away from old things. And so the idea of my folks moving to Oregon in 1971 was an expansion of the black community in relationship to our history in the United States. There's a lot of things that when I think about the African-American experience in the United States, I think about these words: rebirth, reclaim, reconstitute. What does that mean? Well, I believe that, and I've been taught through my parents who came up in the 60s, a generation maybe just younger than Willie, but in their impetus was loving oneself, knowing oneself, caring for oneself, and that the idea of black love, of black is beautiful. These are not threatening ideas, but they were made to be that way. But these ideas are ideas that are necessary for the healing of people in the United States, and the trauma of slavery in the United States has still not been dealt with by all of us. We are a family that's dealing with trauma. And so the idea of moving west, of reclaiming, re-identifying who we are as a people, was part of that. But when we came to Eugene, there was an established black community. What my parents brought with them was a love of history, a love of jazz music, a love of culture. Catherine Dunbar was a great teacher of anthropology and dance who made her home in East St. Louis. And she and other peoples had an intellectual renaissance during the 60s. And it was about black culture. It was about re-identifying with Africa. And I think these things are very important, even as we move forward today in 2016, because it's about feeling good about who we are and understanding that we can work together. Now, what the unfortunate part about my experience coming to Eugene is that, as Willie said, there were 38 men and women who received jobs through the good graces of citizens. Many of the kids did graduate, but there's others who didn't. And there are other, what about the other people in the community who weren't so fortunate? And so the whole idea is that we have a class of citizens in Eugene, Oregon, who have for generations been underserved and who in a lot of ways have given up. And my generation is a generation, I'm 47, 48. We saw a great, I would almost say genocide take place in the 70s and 80s through drugs, through the war on drugs, through the mass incarceration. And what that did is broke up the black family, the idea of unity within the black community. And unfortunately, I think that has been a very negative, had a very negative outcome. And so my family and has always been about reclaiming that African identity, having strength from within, resilience, because sometimes the healing has to come from within. The answer is within. And so we can't always ask for the outside help, even though we want everybody to pitch in as a community. And so my father was a great person who studied African history. When I grew up, he was always into Chinese philosophy, because that's what he studied in college. But then as he studied more, he began to learn more about Africa, and the family learned more about Africa. And I, as a young boy, kind of studied along with him. And so by the 80s, there had been a project in Portland, called in the Portland public school system, because there was a wave of support for Afrocentric education, which meant that we would look at Africa and put Africa as a center place and then think about its role in civilization and in the world out of respect. That has not been done to this day. In the 80s, there was a good movement behind this, and there was a study done in the Portland school districts by notable scholars such as Wade Noble, Joyce Hardiman, and Asa Hilliard, very notable African-American scholars who study ancient Africa, and who they believed that by putting black Africa in its rightful, respectful place in history, connecting ancient Egypt and Kemet with the history of black Africa, that we would have a better respect for the history of black people as being a part of the brotherhood of man. And so this was called the African-American Baseline Studies. And I would encourage anybody who's interested to go online and just punch that in. You'll be able to find all 8 of the studies. And these are exhaustive studies that I believe they still could be used today. We just passed in the state of Oregon House Bill 2016, which acknowledges that African-American students are underserved, acknowledges that there needs to be culturally based education so that people can feel good about themselves. This is 30 years behind schedule. And it's frustrating to see that this is behind schedule. And not only now, I'm saddened because in the 80s we had traction. By the 90s, black cultural education was a fad, and in the 2000s, you don't see it anywhere. It's almost been discredited. Does that mean black people have been discredited as being a classical people? In a lot of senses, that does mean that. And so I'm very passionate about getting our educational system aligned with history and with morality. Slavery was bad. The hiding of black people's history was bad. Saying black people were not quite human was bad. These things need to be corrected intentionally. And until then, we've got work to do. And so I believe that is my passion. I came to the NAACP out of respect for the history of the NAACP. The NAACP in Eugene goes back to 1978. So it's really relatively recent. But the history of the NAACP is good because it did give us hope. But there's a problem. And the problem is this. Is that the recognition of 2 basic facts should be sufficient. One is that the past legal exclusion of blacks from Oregon established a pattern of economic and political discrimination which has not been easy to overcome. The other fact is that the black population in Oregon is very small. Yet a further examination of blacks' involvement in Oregon reveals that there is a need for political maturity and activism. And so I, in the NAACP, am pushing for folks to get more involved, for black folks and white folks to come together in defense of the spirit of this nation and of the Constitution, because there are those who say that was never the case. But I believe that my ancestors, who slaved before the creation of the Constitution and spoke about liberty and their freedom, who slaved after the creation of the Constitution, talked about liberty and freedom, who slaved after Reconstruction, talking about the freedom and the ballot box, this is an ongoing thing. And I think this is something that we all should get behind, because we all care about the United States of America. And I just think that Oregon has a special place where we can do this work together. Now, we know that Oregon is majority white state, but these are good people. You are good people. And together we can be something, a role model for the rest of the nation. We can create programs and ideas that are models. And that's what I would hope for. And so seeing these young activists at the University of Oregon standing up today, understanding that they have this power, is very encouraging, because the university education is the answer. Getting our history in there, understanding the relationship with European, Asian, Middle Eastern, African history. So I think that as we move forward, we have to just be cognizant that there's a lot of work to do, and that this work has to do with the overall path of the United States. We're in this together. We're one. And so my contribution is that during the time of integration, I think a lot of us believe in integration, but that means that we all have to fight together. We're not just thrown on the bus and don't like each other. The idea was that we would be on the bus and we would converse and everything would be okay. And so this is where my hope, and I am very hopeful for Tariq and Shanice, because these youngsters are very conscious. They've seen the path that we've come through. They hear what I'm saying, but they've got their own vision. And I'm just looking to see what is next. And that goes for all of our youth. And I would encourage us to get all behind our kids and push them forward on this path of unity for the United States and leadership for the world. So thank you.
The respect for history that Eric Richardson, my dad, was talking about is the very reason why we're here and we're having this conversation. Shanice Curry, a soon-to-be UL grad, and a sister of Delta Sigma Authority, Delta Sigma Sorority Incorporated, partook in the Black Student Task Force, which was created this year, and addressed the very same issues that people were dealing with back in Willie Mims times. They went back and they were looking through archives, and they found that there's a list of demands that the students have, and these demands line up with the same demands that were said back in the 60s and 70s. And these are also demands that the GTF said last year and that years past that the university professors have spoken. So Shanice Curry, looking back at this history and organizing her community for the good, she partook in the Willie Mims Project, helping set the whole house up. And she's also been a leader in the Black Women of Achievement. So she has a couple words to speak to you guys about what she's done and what she's learned coming up in the community.
Hey, everyone. Thank you, Tariq, for inviting me. And thank you, City Club, for having me. Again, my name is Shanice Curry. I'm a graduating senior at the U of O. I'm the external director for the Black Women of Achievement, and I'm also a member of the Black Student Task Force. So today, I kind of just want to talk to you guys about me coming into a position of basically activism and where I am now with it. So I came to Eugene in 2012. U of O was actually my last choice in schools, but because of the lack of money, I couldn't go to my first choice, which was Howard University. So I really wanted to go to HBCU. Yeah. I really wanted to go to HBCU, but this was the most feasible option for me, so here I am. Coming into Eugene, I didn't know that there was an established Black community. So what I did was I sought that, and I tried to figure out ways in which I can create that. In doing so, I met Tariq. I met a few other people, and through that, we started leadership with the Black Student Union. I served on the Black Student Union for 2 years as the outreach coordinator, and then I decided that there was a stronger need amongst Black women. And they had an organization called the Black Women of Achievement, which a lot of men weren't involved in, a lot of Black people weren't involved in. So I decided to take it upon myself and try to find some way to resurrect this organization, find a way in which it could better serve our population on campus. So 2 years down the line, early fall of this year, actually, the Mizzou protests had been going on. And students weren't feeling safe, Black students in particular. They were not feeling safe. They were not protected by the university. And we decided to stand in solidarity with them. There was a Black supergroup that was created through GroupMe, in which they had online conversations and webinars, and they wanted students from around the country to get involved in this. And as a grown leader, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's find a way to support them. Let's find a way to let our campus know that this is not an isolated event. That this is something that's going on across the world and actually on our campus as well. And so during that time, we organized some students. It was about 7 of us who met in the MCC. And it was literally an overnight event. We were like, we want to do this. We want to have a march. We want to make sure that we're bringing visibility to this issue and having these administrators and community members and students even recognize that this is going on and that we need to bring attention to it. So overnight, we created a Facebook page. We started sending out text messages. We started making signs. And the next morning, we had the march, and it was recorded to be one of the largest student-led marches in U of O history, and I was really proud of that. So following that march, we had a closed caucus space for Black-identified students. And during this time, we asked students, what is your experience like on campus? How does it feel to be Black on campus? What do you feel is the biggest obstacles for you? What do you think we need to address as a Black student body? And from this, we organized a list of demands. It was about 13 demands, which ranged from getting more scholarships, creating a safe space on campus, because during this time, in the midst of the Black Lives Matter movement, Black students didn't even have a room to congregate in. So it was a lot going on, and we still didn't have a safe space on campus solely for us. And so we addressed that. We also addressed the need for recruitment and retention of Black students. We had met with a few of the university's outreach people, and what we had seen was that there was an organization a program that was called Opportunities Program that was sought off to serve Black students, Native students, and Hispanic students and make sure that they're recruiting students from all these different places in Oregon. And what we noticed was that Black students were continuing to be the ones less served. So it was about winter term, and I asked the coordinator for this program, how many programs have y'all had for Black students this year? And he said there hadn't been any yet. There hadn't been an event in which was supposed to recruit Black students. There was about 7 for Hispanic students, and there were about 5 for Native students. And as we could see, this is some of the reasons why Black students are not being served. There's a reason why the population at U of O is so low. It's not because there's a low population of Oregon. It's because we're not giving that extra push to make sure that students are being served and that we are actually reaching out to these students from across the world. And so recognizing that, we continued our work and we continued to address these issues and recognizing that Black students are just not being served. They're not being given the same resources. It's not an equitable education space for Black students. And so we continued to march. We continued to make sure that these issues came to the public. So from that, we did interviews. We did press releases. We did continuous meetings in which we were still engaging the Black population and letting them know that we're still out here rooting for you. We're still out here seeking to serve you, and we're trying to find ways to make sure that our demands are implemented. So March 26th, actually, the president sent out an email in which he addressed the demands that they were seeking to finally implement. And from those demands, we have the opportunities program. So now there is a specific African-American opportunities program for only black students in which the university is funding to actually recruit students from across the world. In addition to that, we recognize that fraternity and sorority life is an integral part of the college experience. And unfortunately, university has not recognized historical African-American fraternities and sororities. The first black graduate from the University of Oregon, her name was actually Nellie Franklin, and she was a member of my sorority. And from that, we recognize that the trailblazers of the university, of the black trailblazers of the university, have been members of these organizations. However, these organizations have not been recognized on our campus. They have not been funded. And so from that, we made one demand that addressed the need to fund and to recognize these organizations. So beginning in fall 2016, we're inviting six of the D9 organizations, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Alpha Kappa Alpha Fraternity, Delta Sigma Theta, Omega Psi Phi, Phi Beta Sigma, and Zeta Phi Beta. In addition to that, we're also having an academic residential community, and that's something that's been in the works for a long time. There's a lot of actually projects that we just were able to build from, but this in particular was on a standstill, and we realized that the university was making excuses in order to prolong this process. So what we did was we met with a few people who were on the team in building it, and we found ways to promote it. We found ways to make sure that it could actually be implemented. So the academic residential community is actually a residential community in which will house only black students. It will teach them African history. It will teach them African-American history specific to Oregon, and find ways to empower and to educate our young black people as they transition into the university. Thank you. So in addition to that, we have where there's going to be some student advisory boards. There's going to be a series of speakers and workshops that are going to pertain to the African experience on campus. And we're also making sure that diversity data is making sure that it actually includes black students, because what it did in previous years is that it would group minorities in a way that it wouldn't have to show how bad the university was doing in terms of diversity. So what it would do, it would say that we have about 35% of minorities, but it wouldn't say that there's only 1.9% black students, you know? And so that was a way in which they were able to excuse the fact that black students were so poorly represented on campus. And so I think something that was really important that I got from what Eric was saying was that we needed to rebirth, retain, and reconstitute our organizations and our people. And I think that's something that was really important to the Black Student Task Force, something that is still very important to the Black Student Task Force. And moving forward, we will continue to make sure that the work of our ancestors, the work of our elders in the community, and the work that we have been so dedicated to, that it continues into the future years. So the Black Student Task Force will be continuing as a recognized student organization and making sure that black students are served on our campus. So thank you, guys.
Even though Shanice Curry and other students on the Black Student Task Force are graduating this year and going to do bigger and better things, possibly, there's a new generation coming, and they're prepping that generation. And as the saying goes, it takes a community. And everybody in this room, everybody in the city of Eugene is part of that community, and we have to have an active role in making sure that we have a better tomorrow. So that's the conclusion of our speakers part of this. We're going to, I'm going to invite back y'all's president, and we're going to open it up for questions.
I hope this gives you hope for these new generations. Thank you for your work. So today's topic is Mosaic, Black Activism in Eugene. Our speakers are William Mims, Eric Richardson, Shanice Curry, and Tariq Richardson. Now we'll break for a few minutes and return with some questions. Remember that members only can ask questions. I know there's going to be a lot of discussions on your tables, but hopefully you can come up with a couple of questions. So we'll come back.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
Welcome back to the June 3rd City Club program, Mosaic Black Activism in Eugene. Our speakers are William Mims, Eric Richardson, Shanice Curry, and Tariq Richardson. City Club members, when you speak, please identify yourselves and keep your questions to about 30 seconds each. We will prefer that you do a question and not a statement. With that in mind, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Flynn. I'm a City Club member through the sponsorship of the Wayne Moore Center for Law and Politics at the U of O. And my question is for all of the panelists or any of the panelists. Charisse and I were just speaking, and she mentioned there's a culture shock coming into Eugene, even just coming from North Portland. And I have a friend who's coming from New Jersey, an African-American man who's coming to start law school in the fall. We also sometimes have visiting professors who are African-American, and I would like to provide for these folks 1 to 3 resources that they should reach out to as soon as they hit town to find support, to find community, you know, even like a good place to get your hair done. Because that, you know, it matters, right?
Makes a difference.
So I've got my notepad here.
Do you have anybody in mind, or can anyone answer that question?
Eric, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I would think, first off, it depends if they want to just go and see what the church community is in Eugene. We have a strong church community here. So there's Bethel Temple, there's the Father's House, there's Powerhouse, and there's St. Mark's Church. And most of those you can find online if you just look up those names. Mm-hmm. And they all, St. Mark's is the oldest church in Eugene, so it has its history. It's related to the Mims Monument. I would encourage them to go to the Mims Monument. That's our new destination. And we want everybody to go there and see that history. And so those would be it. Blessings, Hair Salon is one, you know. So, I mean, we can just keep going on with that.
Yeah.
And in fact, we just had a session with our organization, and we are going to create a guide for the community with
Fantastic.
These type of information. So look for that next year.
Thank you. And where would someone plug into the First Friday's Communities of Color? Is that a thing? Sorry, then I'll yield the floor.
Yeah, I believe eWeb is the main organization behind those. So if you went to the eWeb website and looked up First Fridays, you could get that information.
All right. Thank you.
By the way, the First Fridays program is hosted by different public entities. Happens to be the First Friday for communities of color. Next.
Sandy Erickson, City Club member. My question is for Tariq and Shanice. And that is, in the late 70s and 80s, I had a lot of friends that were signing up for Mandarin as China was emerging. And today those people have some good positions in China, companies moved in and so on. So now we see Africa emerging. And so I'm curious as to see whether or not on the college campuses there is a big sign-up sheet for Swahili, or, you know, is there that kind of emergence as Africa emerges as the prize in terms of banking systems and telecommunications and so on?
Ndio, Nina Sema Kiswahili. So we actually, a couple years ago, we hired Malimo Mokaya Bosier. Professor Bosier, he's a Kenyan national, and he's one of the leading Swahili experts in the country. He also studies Sheng, which is it's more urban talk in Nairobi, Kenya, that's expanding. So it's slow moving, and actually we've been having problems with the university trying to cut African studies budget because it's not bringing in enough revenue. But there's actually a push, that's kind of what the Black Student Task Force is fighting for, to make sure that our education is preserved. But there's a push to retain that. So we do have students coming in. There's a summer program for Swahili. There's the Black Student Union, the Black Women of Achievement, there's the Black Men's Alliance, but there's also an African Student Association, which works sometimes with the other unions, with the BSU in particular on Kwanzaa. So there's not a really big surge, but that's something that a lot of people on campus are working on right now.
Thank you. Mariah Learn, I'm co-director of Our NECPA Awareness Project. And my question is, last year, over 1,100 black activists signed a statement in support of Palestinian nonviolent resistance in the form of BDS against Israel. And this statement explicitly includes support for the Palestinian refugee right of return to their homeland. Signatories include such notables as Cornel West, Glenn Ford, Ajamu Baraka, Robin D.G. Kelly, Angela Davis, Aaron Dixon, Patrice Cullors, Jamala Rogers, Charlene Caruthers, Bill Fletcher Jr., and Portland NAACP President Joanne Hardesty. How do you anticipate this growing trend might affect local black activism and the NAACP, since the organized Jewish community is circling its wagons around Israel, while black opinion leaders, understanding well the intersectionality of oppression, increasingly support Palestinian human rights? Thank you.
Eric, you're going to go for that one?
Yeah, well, that was a little bit of a statement, but the local NAACP understands the divestment movement and understands the relationship between social justice and the plight of the Palestinians in Israel. But locally, we haven't really made any kind of stance on that issue because we're locally trying to create as much cohesion in our community as possible, and we understand that is a difficult issue and an issue that causes a lot of division. And I believe that, of course, I'm fully against apartheid, and I'm against that type of thing. Now, that does not mean we know what apartheid is. Now, to get into a whole discussion about Israel, I think is counterproductive to what we're doing here in Eugene. But at the same time, it is a serious issue, and I think it's a legitimate issue. And I know that people even within the state of Israel are concerned about that and their peaceful coexistence going forward. And so I'm for that. I'm for peace wherever we can find it. And so, of course, this is just a strategy to reach that, but it's not a strategy that our branch is involved in or the national NAACP, as far as I understand.
Thank you. City Club members, do keep on asking questions about the topic, black activism in Eugene. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dr. Hank Elder. I'm a City Club member for about 2 weeks now, and I am also a recent past NAACP member. At our discussion, we discussed some incidents of racism, clear racism that exists in our has existed in our has, events of racism that have occurred in our community, and we all expressed some frustration with that. We know that the City Club, in presenting this conference, this event, is doing something to deal with that. But what else can our community, besides the City Club, do to help with fight against racism?
I think it's important that you all continue to go to events like this, but to also educate your community. I do a lot of speaking engagements, and unfortunately, I feel like in doing so that I'm representing the black community, and I shouldn't have to all the time. And I'm thankful that you all invited me to speak, but you also have to be engaged in your community and realize that you have to put a step forward and go out and interact with that community and make sure that you're getting the education you need to understand what their experiences are. So I think that's important. So going out,
finding ways to get engaged with the Black community, finding ways to understand what's going on. And they, I mean, we throw a lot of events on our campus, and I think that's one of the easiest ways to actually get some exposure to that. So, yeah.
Thank you.
John Belcher, City Club member since 1999. Thanks to all of you for being here. It was a wonderful program. It was good to hear what you had to say. One of the people at our table was the multi-ethnic person, and that got us to this question. There are programs mentioned such as opportunities and academic residential programs that are only available to Black students. So the first question is, how do you define Black? And the second is, why are they only for Black students? And that's for you, Shanice.
So they're made specifically for Black students because historically Black students have not had a safe place on campus. My first year at the U of O, I will actually speak to that. I was actually depressed because I was on a floor with predominantly white students, and those students did not care to interact with me, ever. And so it's important that we have a safe place for Black students. There is also a diversity floor for students of different minority communities. There's also a floor for LGBTQIA people. And so there's a need for it. And I can't speak for it too much because as much as I try to explain my experience, you guys will never know, you will never understand fully the extent of being a Black student on a predominantly white campus. In addition to that, the other question was, how do you define Black? I feel like Blackness is not, it's open for interpretation. It's not something that you can just easily define, but it's for the community that we have is from people from African descent, and they're going to identify themselves. They're going to understand that they're Black. So I don't think there's going to be any challenges in terms of people trying to, you know, make their way into that community. But yeah, there's a strong need for a Black residential community. There's always been a strong need. And actually in the past we have had a Black residential community, but it was taken from us. So there's a strong need for it.
I think we have less than 5 minutes for the next two questions. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Joan Obie, and I've been a member, I think, since 2011. One thing I want to say is you guys are remarkable. I'm so impressed and so happy that you're a part of our community. And I want to ask you, Willie, after watching Eric, he's always a great spokesman, but these two young kids, how much hope do you have that things are going to just get better? Or do you not have that hope? Oh, no hearing aid, sorry. Good answer, though. You gave a great answer there.
Well, I have a lot of hope simply because it can only go up. You know, your question is kind of running to the last question. I think when we look at the scale of human dignity in America, somehow or another, Black people seem to come in at the bottom of the ladder. And I think that what we have to do is just take in mind that we have to work on each and every issue at a time. And by being active, listening, and become a part of the energy is the only way that we're going to lift the boat. And I think it takes all of us to lift the boat.
Thank you. I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, I think this is short. I'm Joy Marshall, City Club member, an NAACP member. And thank you very much. This is a great program. I really appreciate it. Our question is, how is the African-American community doing now? Do we know here in Lane County, employment, poverty, do we have a sense of that?
Yeah, a very good question. And I can't give you precise numbers on that, but I can give you anecdotal. So as the president of NAACP, I'm always having meetings and consultations with different organizations and institutions in Eugene. And I have to say that everyone, eWeb, the U of O, LCC, the City of Eugene, Lane County, State of Oregon, everyone are looking to hire people of color. If we were, which I haven't done, but if we were to look at their hiring numbers, in their hiring practices, there would be a case to say what the is going on. But on the other hand, I've realized I'm very sad about it when I talked about my generation, but I've realized that there's been an underserving for decades of people who are basically local blacks to succeed and to go through and get certifications, to get qualifications locally. So therefore, there's the rare occasion, and they're the ones who have the families who push them through, but there's a bigger number who don't get that support, and therefore, they're struggling. I see a high rate of black and people of color who are homeless. So the rates and the numbers are bad. And right now, when I look around, there, and there's another issue that's very interesting about Eugene that I'll talk about, is that we have a lot of single mothers, and we have a lot of mixed families in Eugene. And so we're going back to what is black, you know, that's expanding. So my mother-in-law was a Norwegian white woman, but her grandchildren were black. I can go a generation two back, and there are whites in my family, but I am a black. This is the reality here in America. You know, how many of us here have Native? Probably some of us. And so we want to claim that too. And I just want to say we need to respect everybody for their who they are and their ancestors are, because they all have a unique struggle story to bring them to where we are today. And we all ought to honor our ancestors by doing the right thing to make a better community for everyone. So.
Thank you, William Mims, Eric Richardson, Shanice Curry, and Tariq Richardson, for bringing clarity and vision to the City Club program, The Mosaic, Black Activism in Eugene. And thanks again to our sponsors, Network, Charter School, Eugene Legal, KLCC. And folks, don't forget, Friday the 10th, our program is Why Indigenous Peoples Day is Important. Earlier this year, the Eugene City Council adopted a resolution naming the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day. What is the significance of this change? What historical focus are we leaving behind? And what new insights and visions will we celebrate on this new day of recognition? Three activists who are enrolled members of Indigenous group will explain. Support City Club, and for those who are seeking fun events, bubbling champagne, fresh berries, delicious desserts, and civic-minded company will be hosted by City Club on June the 22nd. Information about these programs and opportunities, please find us in How to Be a Member at www.cityclubofeugene.org. This concludes today's program. Thank you so much.